Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Last Word on Today FM.
It's time for the week trending. Aoife Barry, broadcaster and author, is with us, and Lorcan Nine, head of training from the Communications Clinic. Okay, the first story I want to talk about in the week trending is something that's trending today, another bizarre twist in this presidential election contest, and one that I think we're going to have to be very careful in how we describe, because this is a video involving the former Gaelic football commentator and barrister Joe Brolly, and he is on every week on a podcast, the Free State podcast, with Dion Fanning. Dion is an occasional contributor to the week trending, as it happens here on The Last Word. And in this week's episode, Joe Brolly, I suppose, while we say this, Aoife, he depicts the sex act while he is talking about the presidential election campaign. He has since denied that this was aimed at any of the female candidates. He first of all said he was talking about Jim Gavin, but then he changed his position in a second statement. But Heather Humphreys, the Fine Gael candidate, has called it misogynistic. I don't know if Catherine Connolly as yet has issued any comment about it. What shall we learn from this?
Well, it is. It's hard to watch that clip or see images of it. Obviously, it was from the podcast. It was clipped, shared, then deleted, because it is an extremely, I don't even know how to put it into words, really, what it is like watching it. I can't believe somebody would actually do that on a recorded podcast and think that it would be taken as a humorous thing. It was obviously intended to be funny. He was talking about the presidential campaign, I suppose the media side of it, and, you know, answering questions and saying one thing but meaning another. And was the kind of thing that was, you know, we might have before have called it locker room talk, these kind of things that we don't actually put on air and that we actually probably hoping to see a lot less of happening in the locker rooms. So I think it's another twist, like you're saying, on the presidential campaign, in terms of it's always the unexpected moments that we're having happen here. And it's forcing really presidential candidate like Heather Humphreys to come out and say that she thinks that something is misogynistic and she thinks it was aimed at her, when she should be talking about what she's planning to do if she becomes president of Ireland. She's having to be distracted and brought off course by this pretty unsavoury thing that has just broken and just happened. And like, it is very early days in terms of the reaction to it, but she was very quick out of the traps.
Lorcan, even if we were to accept Joe Brolly's subsequent explanation and putting forward a transcript of the exchange between himself and Dion Fanning, which doesn't show the visuals when you look at the transcript, even if it wasn't about Heather Humphreys, is it acceptable behaviour by a so-called mature man to be behaving in the way that he did?
It's bizarre behaviour. It's gross is the only word I keep coming back to, to discuss it. I mean, he was making the point that it's the presidential race is like a nasty rose of Tralee,
which in and of itself is not a great line to be going down. Yeah.
And that Jim Gavin wasn't too suitable to the kind of the lightweight type of answers they would give. People, I suppose, have linked it to him being talking about maybe Heather Humphreys, because what he was saying as he was miming this sex act, as he was talking, he was putting on a voice that perhaps was an attempt and might be linked in there.
Because it certainly didn't sound like a voice you'd expect Jim Gavin to be speaking.
Certainly didn't sound like a male voice that he was putting on. And previously in the podcast, he'd put on a voice when he was talking about one of the candidates. And to me and to my ear anyway, it sounded relatively similar. But I suppose we don't know what was in Joe Brolly's head in many different ways as he was saying this. So you have to take
him
at his word.
Let's not know what's in Joe Brolly's head.
So look, he himself has called it childish, crude, inappropriate. And it is all of those three things. Like, it's probably not like the biggest story in the world, not the biggest scandal in the world, but it is gross. It is unacceptable. And I suppose, look, it's revealing of something in the person who was talking about it. I find it absolutely bizarre that not only did they record this at the time, not only did they not think afterwards, say, well, maybe this shouldn't go out, that they clipped it. as one of the clips that they put up themselves on the podcast. So it took a long while
because
for them to realise, hang on here, don't be miming a sex act while talking about the presidential election. Mm. I would have thought that's pretty 101 stuff.
Yeah, because in fairness, Dion Fanning looked quite shocked by what he was witnessing, and I believe he did take issue with Joe Brawley afterwards about it.
He looked incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah,
as it was going on. Look, in the coverage of this in the Irish Times, I think it was Helen Coyne. The way she described it was he attempted to make a joke, and I think it's one element that's important to say as well. That Helen Coyne is right. It was an attempt at a joke. It wasn't funny. It wasn't even locker room talk funny. It just it felt absolutely flat, and it felt flat with Dion as well. And look, I find it really, really strange that nobody there went back and said, hang on, like, let's apologise straight away. Let's not put this out. That was an overstep. Because to be fair, look, people talk for a long time on podcasts. Anybody can make a mistake. Anybody can misspeak. But the fact that he's kind of gone back a few times and, you know, tried to correct the record rather than just saying, do you know what? I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have done that at all. I shouldn't do that in private. I shouldn't do it in public. You shouldn't do it.
Yeah, like there's such a massive learning lesson in it, to say the least, for a lot of people. But, you know, like I edit and produce podcasts myself, and you're paying so much attention to every single breath and word that you say. And yeah, like you're saying, Lorcan, things can fall through, things can fall through the line, I suppose, in terms of what people are saying. But at the same time, when you're talking about a podcast of this level, you're talking about a visual element of it, which was a key part to what was going on here. That is why we're talking about it here. And the fact that that kind of wasn't picked up at a production level and what was shared on that wider level in terms of clipping that, there's a massive lesson, I think, there about what's acceptable and what isn't acceptable. I keep having this fear that things that were acceptable, became unacceptable, are now filtering through and becoming a lot more acceptable in society for a variety of reasons. And this does kind of raise another red flag for me, is like, how did that slip through the cracks? Because it really does indicate that there wasn't enough questions asked at the time around why it was being made public, because it should have just been left on the cutting room floor, basically.
Okay, let's talk about another sports star who has made his name since retiring from football as a commentator, but also is a significant property developer in Manchester. This is the well-known former Manchester United footballer Gary Neville, who posted a video this day last week after the deadly attack on a synagogue in Manchester days earlier.
The division that's being created is absolutely disgusting. Mainly created by angry, middle-aged white men who know exactly what they're doing. Funnily enough, on one of my development sites last week, there was a Union Jack flag put up, and I took it down instantly. And some people might be watching this and thinking, well, Gary, you're not very patriotic. I played my country 85 times. I love my country. But I've been building in this city for 15, 20 years, and there's no one put a Union Jack, a Jack flag up in the last 15 to 20 years, so why do you need to put one up now? Because quite clearly it's sending a message to everybody that there is something you don't like. The Union Jack flag being used in a negative fashion is not right. I've always said this about, I played in a football team with a group of people from Manchester, a group of people from Ireland, Wales, Scotland, but also people from Africa, people from Asia, people from America, people from Europe, and we were a beautiful team. United as one. Brexit has had a devastating impact on this country, and the messaging is getting dangerous.
And let's just hear a little bit of how Reform leader Nigel Farage responded.
Hang on a second. He's blaming middle-aged white men, the people that actually pay for Sky Sports, pay his salary. He's blaming them for all the division, not some evil, crazed, mad Islamist who went out to kill innocent people. I tell you what, this Gary Neville is so detached from reality, so detached from the average football fan, it is not true. I'm amazed that Sky Sports keep him on. What do you think?
Oh, so Nigel Farage wants Gary Neville to be cancelled. Freedom of speech.
Yeah, freedom of speech for whoever I choose to have freedom of speech. It's a really interesting video, and I mean, it does speak to that greater discussion and, you know, controversy that's going on around at the moment in the UK, around, well, in England particularly, around the use of the Union flag, which stems from earlier this year when a young girl, her family said she was prevented from making a speech about her British culture while wearing a dress with the Union flag on it, and that kicked off basically this big kind of social media storm around around the country where people were joining a group called Operation Raise the Colours and putting up flags to try and demonstrate their kind of patriotism. But as we're seeing in Ireland and the UK, there is a fine line between patriotism and nationalism when it comes to flags, and flags are becoming such, even more so than they even were in the past, particularly in Ireland, are becoming a real fractious moment and a fractious point. And, you know, Gary Neville is here trying to make a point about it by saying that he is definitively not backing those who are from the kind of Raise the Colours side, who have, you know, allegedly have links to far right activity. There's, you know, donation made by Britain First towards that operation. So I think in one way, I mean, he's using his massive position of power to talk to people and to set out his stall. I do believe, however, some people who were working on the site were saying, well, other flags weren't taken down and just the Union flag, which might be indicating they're trying to maybe, you know, not get into the reasons why the Union flag is controversial. But I suppose it also does say that some of them might not have put it up for the reasons that Gary Neville might think. But I still do think that at a time when the UK is really, really going through serious issues, that, you know, people are having to put their stall out, and that is what he is doing to definitively say that he's not on that side.
What do you think of all this Lorcan 9?
A couple of different points on it. Like, the first one is, I'm sure well-meaningly, but Gary Neville has effectively fallen into the trap that is set in these situations where, like, they want this to happen. When you put up the flag,
they want
the flag to be taken down, so they can then say, oh, well, you know, you're taking down the flag. And he probably fell into the trap in the exact way that people maybe want you to fall into the trap, which is to then blame middle-aged white men, which, if you'd want to be less divisive, is probably not the way and the language to use to be less divisive.
Yeah,
to
you're
work
handing
it through
it to reform.
So there is a degree of, if the flag stays up or if the flag goes down, they're kind of getting what they want when they bring up, and therefore Farage was straight in. I mean, he'd love Gary Neville to be the foil for him and to be the enemy for him to run through. So that's one point on it. On the point about that, you know, patriotism versus nationalism, I think the real question is that there's an ethno-nationalism, which is, you know, you are proud of your country because of your history, and it's more genetic. It's more England for the English, and that form of nationalism. And then there's a civic nationalism, which is obviously you're proud of England the entity, or Ireland the entity, that everybody who's here right now, what we were building together, what we were working through. There are two different forms of nationalism. And I think if we bring it to Ireland, and we see the flags flying all over Dublin now as well, like, Ireland is it looks different now than it used to, and is going to look even more different in 10, 15, 20 years' time. Okay, immigration is going to continue, because effectively for the economy, for our health service, for the pensions, for our old and aging population, immigration is going to continue. No politician is going to say we want less economic growth or we don't want people in our healthcare system. So immigration is going to continue.
Can I just say, in relation to that, I think at this stage, is it 2/3 of all people working in the health services in Ireland have actually come from abroad?
Yeah, it's a phenomenal number. And it's a huge change. So that's going to continue to happen. We have to find a way to talk about a civic nationalism in Ireland that actually includes people and doesn't just say, look, you can't put up the flag. But there has to be an element where we talk about, hang on, what's the Irish story that we can all be proud of and all feel Irish, but actually includes the people who are here as well? Like, people keep talking about, we don't have a conversation about immigration. We talk about immigration a lot, but I don't think we're having the right conversation about immigration on both sides. We have to find a version of a narrative around civic nationalism that does include everybody, but then doesn't alienate people who are looking and saying, oh, Ireland does look different. That instinctively makes me feel a bit more uncomfortable. How do we bring those people with us? Because Ireland will look different and will continue to look different, because Ireland won't run if it doesn't.
I suppose a few different elements to that, and one thing I keep thinking of when I think about the issue around the flags being put up around Dublin, and I live in an area where I'm walking down the road and flags are put up in flagpoles, is that it's coming at a time when actually a lot of people, particularly younger generations, are having such a massively positive connection with their Irish identity, including people who are from all different backgrounds whose parents might not have originally been from Ireland. It's a time when people are speaking Irish in a way they certainly were not speaking when I was in school or college. Like, you were mortified if you were an Irish speaker. Now I'm mortified I'm not an Irish speaker. So it's coming at this amazingly beautiful time where people are connecting in with Irishness and all of the different forms of Irishness that is, whether you're born here or moved here or otherwise. And it's ironic then that the flag has become this symbol of division in Ireland, when it actually could have been embraced and actually represent this idea of people connecting into this Irishness. And I do think it's such a complicated thing, because we want to have discussions about things, but at the same time, I find often when we talk about a discussion about immigration, it becomes people talking about why it's bad for people to move into Ireland, which is such an awful thing to hear and have to contend with. And I think that's the side of the discussion that is really difficult.
Listener Tom says, promote healthcare by keeping the nurses and doctors retrained train here rather than have them emigrate? Well, yes, indeed. Many of them go to get further training overseas. But even if they were all to stay here rather than emigrating, we would still need an enormous number of nurses and doctors coming in from other countries because of our needs in this country. Gilly Cooper, who died this week, who was 88, I think, famous English author, somewhat derided at times during her career. Mm-hmm. However, the Disney adaptation of her book, Rivals, has certainly gave her sort of a new lease of life before the end, didn't it?
Yeah, and she's such an interesting kind of life story and career story, because it really wasn't until her 50s that she really took off as a writer, and she started off as a journalist. And, you know, she was a reporter for a long time. She had a column, and that led to her then doing her fiction writing novels, and then her Rutshire Chronicles, the pun in the name is intentional, really became the thing that kind of set her out as this icon. And she really was someone who was quite derided for a long time, because, like, her books are essentially bonkbusters, but, you know, well-written bonkbusters by all accounts. But over the last number of years...
Oh, you've never read one of them?
Well, when I was a kid, I will say, when I was a teenager, I definitely flicked through my mother's copy of something like Polo to try and find all the naughty bits, but I haven't read any of the other ones. Like, and I think that, that's an example. She would have been somebody that I would have thought, no way would I read Gilly Cooper, because that's not serious writing. And if you look back at maybe the last 30 years of women's writing, you would have had the movements of, you know, Chick Lit, for example, which would have derided women's commercial fiction. And a lot of that has changed over the last 15, 20 years, where people actually realise women's commercial fiction is a very important part of the whole ecosystem, and that Gilly Cooper is doing a great job of what she's doing, and she is writing about stuff that other people aren't having the cojones to write about. And then also the TV show really just leaned into the
which
real kind of...
Which was great fun, actually.
Really good crack. And it shows that, like, you can actually have a bit of... You can have crack, and you can have that kind of... those sexy stories.
Yeah, funny enough, I actually had to, because of a book club thing that I was doing last year on RT television, read the Gilly Cooper book. And it was actually very well written. I was quite surprised by how well it was written. You're looking surprised to me, Lorcan. Have you read any of her books? Have you watched the TV show?
I have. I was blissfully unaware of the TV show or the books. I was more raised my eyebrow, Matt, because of the way you phrased that there, if you had to read one of the books such a book, Matt Cooper.
I found myself book. Admiring and enjoying it.
Yeah. And look, there is, isn't there? I mean, there is a tendency to something, if it's written to entertain, if it's written to be popular, and in particular, if it's written to be popular for women,
it's seen
as lesser. I remember there was a big backlash, wasn't there, a number of years ago when Cullen Tobin kind of said he doesn't like any genre fiction, and
Colin Tobin, yeah, he said he didn't write. I think I could be misquoting, but it's generally along the lines of he kind of doesn't write romance, or something about the romance genre. And if you look at a book like Brooklyn, or if you look at loads of his books, they're all about these beautiful romantic relationships.
It's
not commercial fiction,
I think Mary Keyes made that point pretty directly, wrote Brooklyn but said it was literary fiction. So, I think a legacy of anybody. I mean, she sold, I looked up 11 million books in the UK. I mean, that's up there to the very top, you know, 10 within the charts of people who've sold books in the UK within her lifetime. It's phenomenal to books, and it brought a phenomenal amount of joy to people, phenomenal entertainment to people. That's a great legacy. I mean, to have that legacy, that you managed to entertain that many people for that long. I mean, you know, Matt, you obviously can claim that. You've been on the radio for quite some time, but very few people can.
Well, let's talk and go on about somebody who might don't know what his legacy will be, but he's a bit of a flag waver as well. Conor McGregor, back in the news this week. An 18-month ban for an anti-doping violation. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so he missed 3 tests. So he's still apparently a live athlete and live sports person. And so has to then be tested for anything he might be taking in terms of doping, and he missed 3 tests in a very small period of time, which means he's now being banned for 18 months. The ban is up until March. Donald Trump is, as people will know, organising a big UFC event on the White House lawn, which, I mean, when you would just get hit over the head with symbolism of America and
not
American culture and where they are. So Conor McGregor is apparently very keen to be involved in this spectacle. Dana White, who's in charge of UFC, has said, look, they haven't decided who the fighters were, but this would lapse before that, so he may still be involved in that. And obviously, look, as we saw in St. Patrick's Day, Conor McGregor is a massive cultural figure in the United States, and so we have that to look forward to, perhaps, still.
Okay, let's talk about Robin Williams' daughter, Aoife. The late actor Robin Williams, I think he's dead nearly a decade now at this stage.
That's long, yeah, 2014. But,
they're over a decade, but he's now resurfacing on social media because of AI clips.
Yes,
tell us about this.
His daughter, Zelda Williams, claims that she's been getting sent these videos that are AI-generated clips that feature her father, which is not a surprise to hear because thanks to AI video technology, generative video technology, you can effectively kind of create any sort of video that you want. And the idea that fans might want to make videos of him in one way, you can say, okay, they want to kind of, you know, it's maybe a bit of crack to see their idol. He was such an incredible actor and comedian. But the idea they send them to the daughter is just a really grim thing. So she's telling people it's not what he'd want. He wouldn't want his digital likeness recreated by AI, etc., especially because of the circumstances of his death. He took his own life. He had Lewy body dementia. It's very sad. And he had a really wonderfully long career. But I think what it really speaks to is that moment that we're in now in terms of generative technology, generative AI, and how it intersects with Hollywood. Around the same time, we saw the stories last week about Tilly Norwood, who is the quote-unquote AI actor. And then if you go back...
tell us about Tilly Norwood.
Yeah, so Tilly Norwood was basically created by this company called Particle 6, and a woman called Aline van der Velden came out at an event about a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, to say that her company had created this AI actor who just happens to be a young, beautiful woman with an English accent. I mean, she falls within all of the kind of beauty ideals people want at the moment. And she said that she had agents sniffing around Tilly Norwood to potentially sign her. Now, I mean, did she or did she not? I would put question marks around that. Really canny bit of advertising for the company to basically say, we have the technology to make this. It immediately kicked off a firestorm. You had people like Emily Blunt, and you had people from SAG-AFTRA, which is the union, actors union, saying this is something that we really don't want to happen. We don't want actual actors to be replaced by AI actors. I don't think you're going to see somebody rocking up in an AI version on the stage of the Oscars in 2026 or anything, but it does speak to the greater issues around how AI is being treated within Hollywood and in the film system.
Could we get an AI president? Could that be the solution?
Some people might want that.
That we could get a sort of get all of the previous presidents, a large language model of all their speeches and pronouncements, and create a new president.
We're talking to your previous guest, Lise, outside in her podcast. Just put her podcast into AI and say, well, the best of all of these former presidents and scandals of all of them have the AI president. I don't know. I thought that the woman's daughter, Zelda, her quote on it, I thought, well, really summed it all up, which said, you're not making art, you're making disgusting, overprocessed hot dogs out of the lives of human beings, out of the history of art and music, and then shoving them down someone else's throat, hoping they'll give you a little thumbs up and like it. Gross. And I thought that's relatively accurate.
Thank you, Lorcan Nyan from the Communications Clinic, and Aoife Barry for the Week Trending.
The Last Word on Today FM.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.